se ha ido, por el que se va. Agua del tiempo que corre muerte abajo, tumba abajo, no volverá. Soy que tiene cuerpo, la tierra la beberá. Fuego soy, aire compacto no he de durar. El cielo sobre la tierra tumba muertos, sobre el mar lo siembran hoyos de arena y les echa cala. Yo soy el tiempo. Es mi muerte la que va en los relojes andando hacia atrás, hacia atrás.
Are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM or catch it streaming live at www.freakradio.org. This is your weekly feminist radio collective show. Your co-hosts for the day are Alexis and Maya, and today's show is going to be dedicated to Gloria Anzaldúa, who is a beloved figure here in Santa Cruz up until her death in April of 2004, she is renowned as a Chicana lesbian feminist writer, poet, scholar, activist, best known for her really important books that have meant so much to so many people, including Borderlands, La Frontera, This Bridge Called My Back, writings by radical women of color. And, well, there's lots more we can say about her, but our guests today are going to be, we're very honored to have Ana Luis Keating, who is the editor of the new book, Entre Mundos, Among Worlds, New Perspectives on Gloria Anzaldúa, and Irene Reti, who is a longtime close friend, comadre, collaborator with Gloria's, who's now working on the Living Memorial Altars Project at UCSC. So we're very lucky to have both of them with us here today. But for now, oh yeah, you've been listening to Lila Downs. That song was Mi Corazón Me Recuerda. And now we're going to play some M.I.A. Pull up the people. And welcome to another edition of Free Radio Santa Cruz Feminist Radio Collective show. My name's Alexis. I'm here with Maya. Today on the show, we're going to be doing a special for the whole rest of the time on Gloria Anzaldúa. And we have two guests who are going to be in the studio and on air, as Maya already said. We're going to start this off in about 10 minutes. And I know that you just listened to a, if you've been listening all morning, to a long thing on freedom.
So we thought we'd just give you a little bit more of a musical break here in the world and let you chill out a little bit longer with MIA. You just heard Pull Up the People, and I'm going to play you one more song. This one's called Fire Fire.
Otherwise, I would be... a part of who I am, and part of what I do is being a warrior, a reluctant warrior, a reluctant struggler, but I do it because I'm committed to life. We can't avoid it. We can't run away from it, because to do that is to be cowardice.
Cuando yo salí del rancho, no llevaba ni calzones, pero sí llegué a Tijuana de puritos aventones. Como no traía dinero, me paraba en las esquinas para ver a quién gorreaba los pescuezos de gallina.
Yo quería cruzar la línea de la Unión Americana, yo quería ganar dinero porque esa era mi tirada. Como no traía papeles, mucho menos pasaporte, me aventé cruzando cerros yo solito y sin coyote. Después verán cómo me fue. Llegué a Santa Ana con las patas bien peladas, los huaraches que llevaba se acabaron de volada, el sombrero y la camisa los perdí en la correteada que me dieron unos güeros que ya mero me alcanzaba. Me salí a la carretera muerto de hambre y desvelado, me subí en un tren carguero que venía de Colorado y con rumbo a San Francisco de un vagón me fui colado, pero con tan mala suerte que en Salinas me agarraron.
And I have with me now in the studio by proxy from Texas, Ana Louise Keating, who is very honored and delighted that she's with us. She's the editor of a recent volume about Gloria Anzaldúa in context, and also the co-editor with Anzaldúa of This Bridge We Call Home, and also the editor of a book of interviews with Gloria Anzaldúa. So Ana Louise, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm really happy to. I'm glad you're doing this show on Anzaldúa.
So we wanted to start by asking you to just talk a little bit about who Gloria Anzaldúa was, maybe to tell us a little bit about her life story, situate her a little bit for listeners who maybe don't know anything about her.
Sure. She was born in 1942 in the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas, and basically just kind of grew up, got her education, experienced racism and sexism and classism when she was young. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't until she became involved in the feminist movement that all of the various pieces of the kinds of discrimination she was experiencing came together for her, so that she could kind of understand how the system of power and oppression worked.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really interested in being an artist, whether it was a painter or a writer. And through writing, she found a way to kind of put her activism out there into the world. And she's best known for two books. The first book is called This Bridge Called My Back, Writings by Radical Women of Color. It was first published in 1981. It was co-edited with Sheree Moraga. And really, it was an attempt by U.S. women of color, feminists, to say to white-raced women feminists, especially like middle-class feminists,
mm-hmm.
hey, we are part of the feminist movement, and you have really been acting in racist and classist and exclusionary ways. So it really was a call to kind of broaden social justice movements and broaden feminism.
Mm-hmm.
It has been used in a lot of classrooms, and it has it's been seen as like one of the earliest calls for recognition by women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Anzaldúa and Moraga can be credited pretty much with putting out the term women of color and kind of getting it into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
The book was also important because it mixed a lot of genres. So it suggested that theorizing can be done in multiple genres. It can be done through letters. It can be done through poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done through journal entries, as well as through more conventionally theoretical forms. So it was groundbreaking on multiple fronts. The second book that she's very well known for is called Borderlands La Frontera, The New Mestiza. It was first published in 1987. It began as a book of poetry, and in fact, the second half is poems. But when it was accepted for publication by Spinsters Inc. Aunt Lute, they suggested she write a short foreword for it, and the foreword turned into what has become the most famous part of the book. In Borderlands La Frontera, Ansel Dua is looking at her home in the literal geographical borderland, but she's also talking about other forms of borders and other forms of borderlands, the kind of psychic collision spaces, and its impact on identity. And so she can be credited in that book with kind of making a really huge contribution to border studies, mm-hmm. and a huge contribution theoretically to the idea of the borderland.
Mm-hmm.
So she's combining critiques of the sexism and racism and homophobia within her home culture, like a Mexicano culture, but she's also critiquing Catholicism and the larger U.S. culture for its racism. So she brings together a number of different areas and kind of approaches them all at once. So it so theoretically, that book has been very important also, and it has really spoken very loudly to Chicana experience, or to experience of life on the borderland. And I'll just say one more thing and then stop. Another really important thing she does in Borderlands is she code switches. She she uses multiple languages. She uses Spanish, she uses Chicano Spanish, she uses English, she uses Nahuatl, which would be like an indigenous Mexican language. And she doesn't apologize for doing that. She makes that, you know, integral to the text.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, she has authorized, she's like allowed other people to do it. It has become much more accepted. And Borderlands is anthologized in many of the major American literature textbooks. So that's a little bit, kind of a little biographical and kind of some of Ansel Dua's main impact.
And so one of the things that we've been talking about here and that I notice a lot about Ansel Dua is that, especially in This Bridge Called My Back, the capacity to coalesce and constellate a whole network of already present and lively work that women of color were doing and that was obviously happening into something that formed a kind of fulcrum for people to take up these theories and move with them. So there's a woman in graduate school here in Santa Cruz who's doing work on, somewhat critical work on how This Bridge Called My Back has become marked as the only, you know, initial origin point of this movement, and saying, no, what actually this bridge did was bring together all these things that were already happening and move them into this space that they could be talked about and seen slightly differently. So that's one of the reasons that Ansel Dua is one of the reasons we're doing this show on her, is for the power of being able to bring these things together and move them out into a space where they could become taken up and used for, you know, struggle for other people.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. If you look at the introduction to This Bridge Called My Back, you see that the idea for the book originated in Gloria's experience. She was at kind of a spirituality retreat, and she had gotten kind of a, what would you say, kind of like a tuition fee waiver. She was there for free, but she was feeling kind of like discriminated against by some of the other participants, and so she had a conversation with Merlin Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and your listeners might know Merlin Stone as a scholar who's done important work on like early goddess figures. She wrote a book called When God Was a Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was through that conversation and through Ansel Dua's own feelings of being left out, and then through some of the experiences of being tokenized, that she kind of realized there was a need to bring these things together. So over and over in her work, what we see is like something happens to her personally, and she acts on it in a way that really allows for these amazing connections with all sorts of other people that kind of can be drawn to the project and, you know, pull on the things that they've been working on, create these works or create these forums, which then touch a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting.
And so can you talk a little bit about the book, This Bridge We Call Home, which you co-edited with Ansel Dua?
Yes. The publishing history of This Bridge Called My Back has been, like, really erratic. It was first published by Persephone, and then that, which is a woman's press, and it went out of business. And then it was published, reprinted by Kitchen Table Press, which is a woman of color press.
Mm-hmm.
And that press also went out of business. So I'm not sure. It was like the late 90s, somewhere around there. I was working on Ansel Dua's interviews for that book, Interviews and Entrevistas. And over and over again in the interviews, the interviewer would ask her some form of the question about this bridge called My Back. Why did you do this bridge called My Back? What were your goals?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and when she talked about it, it was really clear that one of her goals was to broaden feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, not just some critique of racism, but to say feminism is all of these things. You know, just we need a larger view of it. And to really call for these coalitions. And so I was just really wondering how much progress had been made.
Mm-hmm.
So I approached her with the idea, you know, just as a way to kind of see whether really there has been this progress, whether the critique of racism within the women's movement and within, you know, feminists more generally, whether it had really been listened to, whether we had seen change, whether some of the really some of the more critical comments about white raced feminists were still true, or if there were exceptions, like were we at a different space?
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of our big interests in the book, in doing the project. And the other one was at the end of this bridge called My Back, the last section is called El Mundo Zurdo. And it's this vision that is drawing on a political form of spirituality to create new communities, basically of outsiders, people who don't fit in anywhere else, regardless of whether it's because of sexuality or gender or racial identity or whatever. And so one of our goals in doing this bridge we call home, in addition to just assessing where feminism and feminist theory was at, was also to kind of challenge thinkers to incorporate more of this kind of politicized spirituality into like social movements,
mm-hmm.
social justice movements. So those were kind of two of our goals for the book, or when we went into it, two of the things that we were thinking about doing. And so we sent out the call for papers, and, I mean, we got an amazing variety of things, which really indicated, it kind of confirmed our sense that in some ways feminist movement has really changed. But in other ways, there still are some of the very same problems with racism and problems in pedagogy and things like that in classrooms.
So can you say a little bit about how the book showed changes?
How it shows changes?
Yeah, in the feminist movement and then also how it shows things that have not changed.
Yes. We have, one of the big changes was we have some really insightful pieces by feminists who identify as white.
Mm-hmm.
And they exhibit, for example, Rebecca Annerud has an essay in there. And she clearly has learned from this bridge called My Back, which she, as so many people do, she encountered it in a women's studies course.
Mm-hmm.
And she has really learned the lessons, not just about how race functions in this country, but about how whiteness functions in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And she went on from that book to reflect on its lessons and to reflect on her own life and then to implement those lessons into her teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that is one example. And there's several pieces like that of women who would identify as white, but who have really learned a lot, you know, and do not have that kind of racism or white supremacism. Another really interesting change is that the book is broader because we're dealing with issues like transgenderism.
Mm-hmm.
One of the contributors to the original book, Anita Valerio, has had a sex change operation and is now Max.
And actually,
Wolf Valerio.
When this bridge we call home came out in Santa Cruz, there was a book reading for it at the UCSC Women's Center, and Max read there and talked about the experience of writing as a woman in this bridge called My Back, and then what it was like to enter this space of even the book reading as a white man, and how that was really different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those, you know, that gives us a chance to really think about the impact of identity and think about some of the ways it can change.
Mm-hmm.
And, Max's essay really kind of challenges readers to think about definitions of masculinity,
mm-hmm.
and the body and the embodiedness of gender.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, that is another kind of big switch or shift or change. I mean, actually knowing Max's whole story, you can go back and you can read the Anita Valerio piece and you can, like, say, oh, yeah, I see it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting in that way. We also really wanted to include pieces by Native women who were doing theoretical work. Mm-hmm. Because Gloria felt that one of the weaknesses to the first bridge was that the work by Native women didn't indicate the theoretical component. So that's another addition in this second book. I'm mm-hmm. not sure whether that's a change or not.
Well, I think that one of the things that I noticed, and you mentioned this also in your introduction to This Bridge We Call Home, is a breaking down of the idea that white feminists theorize and women of color feel or write letters. So, in other words, the coming forward of the fact that women of color are doing theory just as much as anyone and mostly better, but in ways that have not always been taken up by the Academy, ways that there hasn't been space, and especially that there wasn't space in 1978, you know, for people to be doing theory that read as theory.
Yeah.
And so opening spaces not only for things that are not automatically read as theory because they don't sound academic or they don't have, you know, particular style, but also for people who are structurally disallowed from being read as theorists and being read as seriously theorizing their lives and the condition of the world, actually being able to do that. So when I read This Bridge We Call Home, one of the things that I thought was that I don't by any means think it's over or it's solved, but that it marked for me that there were a few more spaces open, at least in the academic feminist movement, for these other, you know, other kinds of theorizing and sort of traditional ones, too.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had a number of women of colors have, like, emailed me to say, thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it kind of helps to challenge another one of those stereotypes or one of those binaries.
Yeah.
That only certain kinds of people do certain kinds of theory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been a very important part of it. And I think I hope that This Bridge We Call Home, I hope that what it's done is helped to kind of unpack the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
We can so easily get stuffed into certain boxes, whether it's here's what an academic does, or whether it's here's what a Chicana does, or here's what a lesbian does, or, you know, whatever. There can be these assumptions and these stereotypes. And those kinds of stereotypes end up functioning almost like a lens that we use when we see people. So we don't really see the person and hear what she or he is saying. Instead, we just view them through the stereotype and through these assumptions. And so we really were trying to kind of peel back some of those assumptions
mm-hmm.
through the various pieces that we included in the book.
And did the putting together of that book reveal anything to you about the way that the feminist movement or the situation for people who are concerned about feminism has not changed in the last 20 years?
Oh, yeah. I think that even though, like, Gloria and I wanted to peel back the assumptions and the stereotypes, it's clear that not everyone wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the pieces in the book, Nada Elia, who identifies as Arab American, it's very clear that she, you know, in her piece, she wants to be considered a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in opposition to white women.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is the desire for some of those categories not to change. And you know, some of the contributors, one of the really important changes I guess I should mention about This Bridge We Call Home, and it's obvious from what I said, is that we included pieces by men, and we included pieces by I guess it just ended up being mainly women who identify as white.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the contributors were not happy about that. You know, they wanted This Bridge Called My Back to be a safe space for women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that not just a desire for safe spaces, but I think still the fact that we so desperately need them is something that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
You know, and And I'm not necessarily saying, okay, it should change right now. I mean, it probably still is necessary, but it is one of the things that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
I think wanting to stay in safe spaces or stay with the existing categories is one of the things that I noticed that hasn't really changed.
Yeah, and one of the things that marks for me is the way that the academic feminist movement and perhaps the women's movement more broadly retains very much the same racism and classificatory work that the women's movement of the 70s had. I'm thinking, for example, of some of the stuff around Code Pink. Maybe you've heard some of this, which on this show we think about a lot, the ways that a women's movement that's meaning to be broad-based, for example, for choice about abortion, ends up really not taking seriously some of the women of color concerns around forced sterilization. So that when people are working on issues of reproductive health and reproductive rights, there, I mean, this is just an example, but there does tend to be resting with the concerns of white women, white middle-class women, that mirrors in many ways the way that resting happened in what we now identify as second wave feminism. So I appreciate so much in what you're saying now and in your introduction to This Bridge We Call Home, the careful working against the violence that categories and classification by race, for example, does, while at the same time maintaining a kind of political space for criticizing how these normative judgments keep happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, when I went into this bridge, I thought more people were farther along. I mean, I was worried I was worried, you know, I was going to find out, as indeed I did, that racism was still so ingrained.
Uh-huh.
But because I teach at a women's studies program at Texas Women's University, and our program is multicultural feminist.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the center, is the multicultural, it's women of color theory is at the center. And so when we have graduate students who got their degrees at other schools and they're telling me, we didn't read on Saltua. I only read this in one class. I never heard of This Bridge Called My Back. And they're people who come out of women's studies programs. It is really disheartening.
Right. And then you think of everyone else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to return back to one of the things that you brought up and that I think is really crucial. You characterized it as political activism, and Zaldúa talks about it as spiritual activism. But if you could just say a little bit about what that concept is, and I think this is something that Irene might take up too in thinking about the altars that she's going to talk about in a little while.
Yeah.
So spiritual activism.
I'd love to. Throughout Aung San Suu Kyi's adult life, if you look at her early writings, it's very clear that spirituality was very important to her. And this is a spirituality that drew from indigenous religions or myths, and from Catholicism, and from New Age thinking. I mean, she pulled from all over the place to develop her spirituality, which was a spirituality that was very holistic and that posited a deep interconnection between the physical and the non-physical reality. And so spiritual activism for her, and it's not a term that she coined, but it's also not a term that she got from anybody else. It's kind of a term that seems to be in circulation that she would refer to as part of a zeitgeist,
mm-hmm.
Is a way of kind of operating and enacting one's politics from a spiritual perspective, which would include a very holistic worldview. It would include a belief in our radical interconnectedness. And in This Bridge Called My Back, she says something about how what is happening to people, like, in places that we've never visited, actually affects us.
Yeah.
And if we take that seriously, then that should affect how we live our life every single day. So if you look at the end of This Bridge Called My Back, and certainly if you look at her most recent writings, you see this really deep recognition of our interconnectedness and of this whole spiritual reality, which is not elsewhere, which is totally part of this material world that we see. And I think that that as she started, like, enacting that more, it kind of changed her concept of identity. If you really see everybody as interconnected, then those categories don't have the same kind of weight. You can't just kind of group people, mm-hmm. you know, here's Chicana, here's African American. You're going to look more at the linkages, and you're going to see more of the ways that we're connected and you know, bonded to each other. So, like, in a really small nutshell, I would say that's the part of the spiritual activism. And I guess another really important component, especially for women of colors or for other people who come from non-dominant groups, is that it really is a way of authorizing oneself. It's a way of, like, gaining the self-confidence and gaining the energy to continue to resist oppression and to work to kind of transform it, you know, to work for social justice. It can really, inspire people to keep working. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of, you know, I think that really functioned in that kind of way for her.
There's a phrase that Angela Davis, who teaches out here in Santa Cruz, uses to typify what she thinks of as women of color methodology, and that's a kind of methodology of intersectionality, which, if you want to say something about, please. I'm thinking about it in relation to the idea of interconnectedness and the kind of practice that arises out of that. Do you want to say anything about intersectionality?
Yeah. Intersectionality, Kimberly Crenshaw uses that term also, and it one thing it can refer to is how someone is not just impacted or oppressed because of their gender, but also because of their racial identity and also because of their class, that we sit at the intersection of all of these systems of power, or all of these components of our identity intersect, so that theoretically, when we start looking at issues from that, we're not just going to be what Audre Lorde might call single-issue people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is one of the really important things that Ansel Dua does in her work, and that so many women of color do. In addition to that kind of intersectionality with interconnectedness, I think, in the context of spiritual activism, and I think specifically, if you read Ansel Dua's interviews, you really see it. I mean, she really believed in some kind of spiritual force that infuses and creates absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is actually, if you look at many indigenous teachings, you'll see whether it's, different names, of course, in different cultures, but you often will see this belief that there is some kind of spirit infusing and creating everything. I call that a metaphysics of interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that kind of as this, like, dare I say, foundational belief, then it's really going to affect your perception of everything.
Yeah, and your practice of being in the world.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess one of the things that I really love about the concept and the practice of spiritual activism is that where intersectionality often ends up feeling like a downer in terms of not only are you pressed along this axis, but also along this one and this one, the idea of spiritual activism takes that notion of being at the intersections of all these places as a kind of web of energy that allows you to take that as a network of connection that's a springboard for action. Or
yeah.
a resource for action. So, so I think of it as a really, you know, positive and productive way to think intersectionally, and act in that way. So.
I think that's a really good point. And I think, like, for Ansel Dua, and if listeners are interested, I would really suggest they look at one of her late essays, her essay in This Bridge We Call Home, which is titled Now Let Us Shift.
Yeah.
Because that really is. It's many things, but one of the things it is kind of a discussion of spiritual activism, and she's drawing very much on her own life. And you can see how, for her, spiritual activism functioned exactly like you say, to kind of deal with the intersectionalities, to keep oneself going. And it's not, I know that, you know, the New Age movement and some of the goddess movement things have frankly given spirituality a bad name. You know, let me meditate for a parking space or,
uh-huh.
you know, whatever.
You think that and you live in Texas.
Yeah. But what you see in that essay, in Now Let Us Shift, is this spirituality that is just so much deeper. And it can be very painful. She has she coined the term nepantleta to discuss a person who negotiates among multiple worlds, and through that negotiation can help to mediate conflict, which is this concrete example of how the spiritual activism plays itself out. And we were reading that in class yesterday, in fact, and one of my students said, this seems like a peaceful process, but there's no alegría, like no, to loosely translate would be no joy. I mean, in other words, it's peaceful and it's a way of making sense of things, but it's also, at recurring points, very painful.
Yeah.
So I think her concept of spiritual activism is such a useful and powerful idea for feminists and other social justice activists.
So I want to move now and talk about the new book. And it's very exciting, and I just wonder if you could tell us about it.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Entre Mundos, Among Worlds, New Perspectives on Gloria Anzaldúa. I started the book maybe in 2001 or somewhere around there. I talked with Gloria, and I said, you know, I think it would be interesting. My sense is that she's known for co-editing this Bridge Call My Back, but she's, like, famous within certain circles for Borderlands La Frontera.
Mm-hmm.
That's primarily what she's known for, and she's so well known for it that now what you see if you look at articles, especially in Chicano studies, but not only, is Anzaldúa set up as this matriarch, which then people criticize,
uh-huh.
You know? Because this is how the academy works, right? You take a theory, and then you show what's wrong with it and how you can do it better or how you can do it different. And this is how we academics, like, make our name. This is what we're taught to do. But since Borderlands was published in 1987, and since Gloria was, like, writing and publishing, you know, into and past the year 2000, what my hope was for Entre Mundos was that it would kind of offer larger and broader theoretical perspectives for understanding her work. So I especially wanted to look at, I mean, she, in addition to being an amazing artist, she also, I think, is quite a philosopher.
Yeah.
And she has some really important theories that I was very much hoping would, you know, we could kind of showcase so that people would see other ways to use her work and other ways to understand her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy with how it turned out. I'm, like, so sorry that she couldn't actually hold the book in her hands and look at it, because I think she really would have been pleased with how people are using and growing from her work.
And so one of the things that's striking about this is to see just really a lot of people doing sophisticated theoretical work, and I haven't had a chance to read the book yet because it's still in process here, but I'm just looking at it. Irene brought her copy in, and looking at the list of all the people who are contributors. Just a really wide range of people in different disciplines and coming from different positions, taking up this work in ways that are seem to be the opposite in many ways of the kind of mode you're describing, where there's a person, Maya was just miming putting someone up on the pedestal and then shooting them. So instead, a kind of collaborative, like, thinking seriously about what's useful about a work. And this also, to me, is a really great model of feminist methodology, intellectual methodology, of a kind of collaborative practice, even with people who aren't around anymore.
Thank you. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I do think I agree with that. I mean, you're right. It is very multidisciplinary, and many of the pieces have these dialogues with Gloria.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what they are. It's like learning from her, replying to her, building on it. And we also have some personal essays. In other words, essays by people who are talking very specifically about Gloria, the person.
Yeah.
Karen Neal, the 1001 piece Nights of Gloria Anzaldúa. Anzaldúa was, you know, very interested in writing as an art. In addition, of course, to social change and all of that, she was interested in writing as an art. And periodically, in fact, even I think before the first Bridge was published, she used to do writing workshops out in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So she would periodically do writing workshops. And the last sustained writing workshop she did was at Florida Atlantic University. And Karen Neal's piece is just, it's like you feel like you were in the classroom when you read it. You really get a sense of what Gloria would have been like in the classroom. So there's this whole kind of, you know, personal component, which is really cool. And then you're going to be talking soon with Irene. And Irene's essay from being kind of like housemates or, you know, and writing comadres with Gloria, you get a sense of how important writing was to her. So you get the context in the classroom, you get Gloria as a writer, and then there's a piece by Lee Miracle, which is her experience of being on a panel at a conference with Gloria. So you get these three different kind of perspectives on the embodied Gloria Anzaldúa, which is priceless, and then combine that with Chela Sandoval's, I can never remember if it's a foreword or a preface, but I guess foreword to the book, where she talks about this car ride with Gloria. And, you know, the human being part just comes alive in these really, I think, important ways.
And so the last thing that I wanted to ask you about, and I'm not sure, because we didn't talk about this before, whether you actually know much about this, but I'm interested in the archive of Anzaldúa's archive that's being brought to Texas. Oh, and I guess Irene is also going to talk about that. But if you have anything to say, I don't know if it's near you or if you've been involved with it at all.
Yeah, I helped. Irene and I, in fact, spent some just amazing days getting it ready. I used to have these conversations with Gloria where she would talk about her archive, and she would always tell me, you know, save all the emails from this bridge we call home, and she would tell me how, you know, how she had saved all the stuff from this bridge called my back, and, you know, save all the drafts, and save this, and save that. And then, turn to find out, she really did save all of her stuff. So, the archives is going to provide this amazing sense of the process of putting together this bridge called my back, the process of putting together Borderland, the process of putting together this bridge we call home. I mean, there's these amazing things, like for this bridge called my back, they sent a letter to Toni Morrison and invited her to contribute. I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and with this bridge called my back, when they did publicity for it, they put together this, like, this play where it was excerpts from a bunch of different pieces. That play script is in the archive. So it will just really help people to get a much larger understanding of the feminist movement, of Anzaldúa as a writer, of her writing process. Hopefully it will help people to see her, you know, understand the care with which she wrote. You know, thinking in terms of the academy, I mean, there are literally dozens of dissertations that could come out of looking at the archives. And I was having a conversation with a publisher at the American Studies Association, and I just said something about the archives, and, like, it's just so stunning. And she said, well, that would really be good, because she's so tired of seeing these book manuscripts that are dissertations from people who don't look at the archives and just try to reanalyze a couple of books.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think it's just a wonderful collection, and I hope that it will really help people to appreciate Anzaldúa in, you know, more ways.
The other thing that I would love to see come out of that archives, because in looking around for material for this morning's show, I had a really hard time finding recordings of Anzaldúa speaking herself. And I was an archivist for 3 years, and one of the things that I did in the archive I was working in was work on audio work, you know, audio, putting stuff out. So I think also Irina's going to talk about this, but it would be really neat to have also more of her voice.
And it's
there,
and it's there, so hopefully it will become accessible, because she saved copies of all her interviews. And,
yeah.
You know, she said she did over 100 interviews, and when she did talks, and they were videotaping it, she said, yes, you may videotape, but give me a copy.
Give me a copy, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent archival practice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, is there anything else you want to share with us or say?
You know, there's one thing that I completely omitted saying that I probably should. In addition to her important work with women of color, feminism or with Chicano studies, she is not given a lot of credit for it, but I would see her as one of the founding figures in queer theory.
Yeah.
you know, she was using the term queer before it became so big in the early 90s. And not just using the term, but actually theorizing about identity and about sexuality in ways that would be called, you know, queer theory. And it's, and it, and each time I teach a course in queer theory, it just strikes me to see how often she's not acknowledged as playing this contributing role in it. And I really think she did.
And one of the, there's a collaborative women of color research cluster group that's doing some writing together here, and one of the things that they note about Ansel Dua's use of queer and some other women of color use of queer is the way that it shifts the class position of what was maybe phrased as lesbian feminism or lesbianism into, you know, all that, you know, that word maps some really interesting stuff about how people are thinking and positioning themselves. And I think that, yeah, that's a really important thing to remember about Ansel Dua, is how she inaugurates also that term and the political work it does.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Well, Ana Luis, thank you so much for talking to us this morning, taking the time.
Thank you.
And also for all your work.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye. So we've been talking to Ana Luis Keating, editor of a new book called Entre Mundos, Among Worlds, New Perspectives on Gloria Ansel Dua, also the editor of This Bridge We Call Home and a book of interviews with Ansel Dua. And I'm just going to give your ears a little musical break before we move into some more really wonderful and fascinating talking. So here's a little bit more Lila Downs.
Cuando yo salí del rancho, no llevaba ni calzones, pero sí llegué a Tijuana de puritos aventones. Como no traía dinero, me paraba en las esquinas para ver a quién gorreaba los pescuezos de gallinas.